The University Tower Chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, his napkin looks a little raggedy. I'm starting to worry. It's Professor Jeff Boats.
It's well used. I'm doing my best to keep this a neat work environment out of respect for my esteemed colleague.
Please.
But are we
That's
in that
a first.
Situation where we like only had one napkin and it had to suffice for like four individuals?
That's sort of Dunkin' Donuts meet hoarders is my usual modus operandi.
Nothing wrong with that.
Shirt tails and sleeves, you know.
Oh my gosh. Didn't we have a question in our last show about Canadian tuxedo?
Yeah, the denim jacket.
I've heard it as the UP tuxedo, but I didn't want to like burn our UP listenership by bringing it up. Continuing around the table, in the position usually held by Jim, just because
I like this.
Jim lives in my mind on the other side of the forest of microphones.
The far end of the table.
But today, through the magic forest, it's Professor Dan Maggio.
Hi, Matt. It's virtually impossible to see you.
Yeah.
Through the sea of
Which is why I'm not sitting down there.
Now we know why Jim likes that seat.
We should do a whole show with every panelist and the host blindfolded. Just, you know, we could feel it out through sound.
Well, you know, Terry Gross on Fresh Air always interviews her guests in another studio.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
She's not seeing them.
That's right. There's something about that, right? There's something about that.
And it works.
I did not know that. She has great conversations.
Wonderful conversations. You would think that.
She's having them because she's with the person.
Right. No, they're sometimes in different cities.
Well, that I understand, but every time she's always separated?
She never does them right there with her. Unlike Diane Rehm, you know, who has them right there at the table.
That's right.
Terry Gross has got them someplace else.
Interesting stuff.
She does her homework, unlike me.
That me being Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
You are me.
Yes.
And the thanks for sugar.
You need more chocolate there, Matt?
We'll all crash at the very end. I do need more chocolate, but I don't want it right now.
Okay, all right, we'll get you at the break. Yeah.
It's just standard, you don't want to talk with your mouth full kind of stuff, even though I do it all the time. All the way around the table and almost back up the block, it's Professor Jim Tubbs. I can see him today.
Yes.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal to see you. And I bet you're happy to be seen.
Oh, yes. It's better to be seen than viewed.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely right. Hey, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. If you don't stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. Find us on Facebook or listen to your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. So this is 1, 2, 3, now, our annual Christmas show. And I've got some great questions, thanks to Professor Chow diligently putting the word out on Facebook. Immediate, overarching, just buckets and buckets of questions sent.
Wow, they're sending them in buckets now. Wow.
Yes, everybody's buckets. Getting ready for Christmas.
Yes. So holiday questions for this year. Dear Matt and panelists, I saw the call for Christmas or holiday questions. I hope the following questions on Christmas trees will serve the show well. Sincerely and happy holidays, Rachel Ralston of Norwalk, Iowa. Thanks for sending them in.
Mm. Thanks, Rachel.
Christmas trees, huh?
Mm-hmm. This is all about arbol. In what Midwest city is it told that the aluminum Christmas tree came from?
Now, is that where the first Charlie Brown Christmas special is set? I've always wondered where those kids were from.
I'm telling you right now, it's relatively close where you would guess Charlie Brown is from, considering Charlie Schultz, or Sparky, as he was known.
Minneapolis.
So it's close to Minneapolis, but not in the state of Minnesota.
Green Bay. Wisconsin.
Getting
somewhere.
Closer. It's
Madison.
It's in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
No, it starts with an M, but it's not Milwaukee.
Madison.
It's known as the other side of the lake crossing, for those who know.
Manistee.
Manistee, but man something.
Manitowoc.
Manitowoc, yeah. Manitowoc,
Where the badger lands.
Yep, that's right. So that was, by the way, well, we'll throw it in there for bonus points. What year was the first aluminum Christmas tree? So we've got Peanuts to sort of help us out.
1954?
Oh, my gosh, so close. 59 is what it
says. I wonder when the circle thing that goes around to shine on the aluminum Christmas tree was invented.
Wow, since I never actually saw any of those in my lifetime,
oh my gosh.
It's so difficult to explain it to my children. But I see them in garage sales all the time.
Now, I wouldn't have guessed that the Peanuts gang were from Minnesota because a lot of their names are Dutch sounding. So I would have guessed Western New York.
Yeah.
Which is where Western. I grew up. Maybe I'm biased.
Yeah, maybe Western Michigan, too. There's a lot of Netherlands going on there. I just can't get the image out of my mind of Linus hitting the tree and hearing the clanking sound. Do they still make wooden trees? What a great line. In what country was the first printed reference to a Christmas tree?
Germany.
Germany is a good guess. Can you guess the year? I'm not going to give you any lead, and let's see how far away we get.
1653,
we got.
I would say 1540.
1540?
Did they have a printing press?
Oh, did we have a printing press then? Well, yeah, because Luther got the Bible printed back then.
Right, so I mean,
and Luther is accredited with decorating.
1598, then. How's about that? Come on, and where's Kendra when we need her?
Yeah, but Jim is so close. It's really? Not, you know, 1531 is what it says here. Wow. So within,
he was even younger.
If Heather and Stephen were here, they would make fun of me giving you 9 years. They're like, that's not at all, and I didn't want to turn it.
Well,
into
out of
statistics,
you know, 500, it's
that's not bad. Yeah.
Didn't he walk down a tree-lined lane at night and saw the stars?
He saw the
shining
stars shining through the branches of the Christmas tree. So
that's what
thought
I
that candles might accomplish the same effect.
Torch your house in 5 seconds.
I was going to say.
Yeah,
fortunately,
well,
his house
fresh tree. Yeah.
What percentage of Christmas trees sold every year are purchased from cut and harvest farms? I used to do that when I was a kid.
Wow.
What percentage?
Yeah, I mean, probably could do this mathematically.
7%.
It's actually quite a bit more.
I would say 23.
Gosh. Yeah. Jim's on fire, 24%.
Wow.
So we'll just say a quarter.
Because I kept thinking like the people go to Home Depot and stuff like that. That's got to count for something, right?
A quarter of the people are actually going out and cutting their own tree
and
down.
They're finding their tree and they're cutting it themselves.
Yeah, they get the saw and go at it. So.
Oh, yeah. I had it backwards. I thought you wanted the percentage who bought from the lot.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, yeah. This is
come on,
cut and harvest.
Shrine needs
only.
Their income, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me tell you.
Does that include illegal cutting?
And those that admit it.
Remember a few years ago when some of Detroit Mercy's students got into a cemetery? And yeah, that was a year. That was a year to remember.
That's entrepreneurial.
What is the average time it takes to grow a medium-sized tree? So let's say 6 to 7 foot tall.
Oh, probably about 10 years.
22 years.
No, I'd say about 8.
Let's go 5.
I'm beginning to think that Jim's seen the cliff notes here. 7 years is what it says for 6 to 7 foot tall.
Under normal conditions?
It says standard temperature and pressure.
My parents used to have a mountain house in Newland, North Carolina, which is in Avery County, which is the Fraser fir capital of the world.
There you go.
That county.
Wait, we might need that.
A lot of their neighbors that was their industry. Just the whole side of mountains would be.
That's awesome.
Fraser fir trees.
So what, did they rotate it?
Yeah.
Kind of. Swash down and then just go. Okay.
Cool. We've had this one before, but it's a nice piece of history. Where does London's Trafalgar Square Christmas tree originate from?
Norway.
That's right. From Oslo. It's a gift
from from Second World War.
World War II.
Annual
supporting
present.
The resistance.
I saw a nice rip on this recently where someone put on social media 150 years from now. It's the annual tradition of the British Prime Minister going to talk to the EU about Brexit. And no one really knows where the tradition comes from. It was just sort of like, but every day this year they buy
but
each other lunch.
But it's routinely voted on by the Parliament.
Exactly.
every 2 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
so funny.
What a disaster that's turning out to be.
No comment. What retailer was the first to mass-produce Christmas ornaments? This was American retailer, 1880.
Sears?
Not Sears.
Montgomery Ward?
No.
Woolworths.
It is Woolworths. You were going down the classic list of old-timey retailers.
Well, you know, we used to have ornaments that we bought at Woolworths.
Sure.
Who didn't? I mean, But then think about how many of those are still
around. And when they broke, they had really sharp edges.
But how many of those companies are even still around?
Yeah.
Montgomery Ward is gone.
Well, F.W. Woolworth was a big concern back then.
Mm-hmm. I bet you the bulbs are still around. My mother has bulbs from her grandmother, I think.
Oh, wow.
Still. And those old wooden, those cardboard boxes.
You guys remember the bubblers? The
ones
those were always fun to look at.
I thought they were hideous.
I liked those, but I always liked the light show. So, I mean, I was into, like...
Well, that oil inside of them that would just...
Is that oil? I don't know what it was.
They would just sort of gloop up.
Yeah.
It's
kind of like the lava lamp in miniature.
I like lava lamps, too. So, I mean...
Speaking of lights, why was the national Christmas tree, the U.S. national Christmas tree, not lit with the exception of the top piece, the star at the top, in 1979?
What happened in 79?
Energy crisis.
The hostages in Iran?
It was the Iranian hostages. Oh. Jeff got it. Oh. But yeah, energy crisis makes more sense.
We didn't have an extension cord long enough.
Oh, gosh. Speaking as somebody who needed, so this is something literally that just happened to me. I need a very short extension cord to be able to make up a very short distance in my new office. And so you can go to Amazon. They have every length you can imagine, including 1 foot extension cords.
1 foot extension cord?
What the? You got to be kidding me. And they were heavy duty, not like, you know, they were three prong. I'm like, wow.
Well, actually,
what a world we live in.
So does like Menards or,
I know,
or Home Depot or even the dollar store.
My problem was I didn't want bright orange.
Okay.
What's wrong with the bright orange?
I love
people
orange,
from tripping.
But, yeah, exactly. On Christmas tree farms, how many trees can be planted on an acre of land? So I guess we're going back to Jim on this one.
Yeah, I wouldn't. On an acre of land.
Okay, so.
Gee whiz.
So let's pretend like they're doing
or can we do this
7 years.
Let's settle this mathematically.
Yes. I was going to say, how wide?
About a football field, right?
An acre is 1/640th of a square mile.
Okay, so how many square feet do you need per tree, Jim?
I don't have any idea.
Put a tree every 6 feet.
No. Okay, 6 foot. 6 foot by 6 foot.
So that's
36 square feet.
50 rows times.
I would say about 800, maybe.
800's a little low.
I would say 1,250.
1,250 is a little low. It says here you can fit 2,000, but here's the kicker. What percentage of those trees will survive the growing process? Obviously not all of them.
Probably only about a half to two-thirds of them.
That I'm giving it to. It's basically 50%.
Wow.
50% will survive, yeah.
And then what happens to the rest? They just kind of...
They lost the fight for water.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. He said the maximum that could survive a 2,000 tree planting would be about 1,500, but mostly it's about 1,000. Crazy. Within $5, oh my. These are the sort of things, I know I've told the story 1,000 times, and my parents listen, but I don't care.
Well, Santa has $8, $9 if you count Rudolph, not $5.
Good call. No, I've told the story before about my dad went out to buy only the second couch of his marriage, and he couldn't believe that couches cost over $1,000 because he'd bought the first one in 1970. I'll tell you what, I'll finish the story after we take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor. Flashback. Christmas, 1984.
The University of Detroit Sleigh Bell Orchestra brings us Ask the Professor. I'm your host on this Christmas program, Edwin DeWint, and today we have all of our regular panelists with us, gathered around the Christmas tree. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, Professor George Pickering.
Sure. I mean, it's a great pleasure to be here, as always, and the top of the season to you all.
Yes. You're all right. On his right.
George is opening all his presents.
I know it. That's his trouble.
Well, I mean, here we are.
Can't you wait?
The very day.
It's so greedy.
And we're on the radio.
I know.
You want me to have my mind focused?
Well.
I can't do that.
Visions of Sugar Plums.
Today.
That was Robert O'Neill from the Department of Psychology. And to his right, from the Department of History, looking very elfin, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Who wrote that? Oh, we're not into the
questions. No, not in the questions yet. No. And on her...
Most of the questions you hear on this program are asked by our listeners.
And on Sarah's right, my left, from the Department of Political Science, Professor John Klemanski.
Hello, ho, ho, Edwin.
Oh, ho, clever. Our first set of questions are sent in from Neil Rifkin of Livonia, Michigan. Christmas-type questions.
Oh, good.
He says, I'll give you a country's name for Christmas, and you give me the country.
Okay, Sweden.
Noel.
Oh. France.
That's right. Yule.
Jule, mm-hmm. Sweden?
No.
Norway?
No.
England? Well, it's part of that.
Scotland.
Yes, Scotland. Yes. Weihnachten.
Germany.
That's right. And that Navidad.
Sounds German.
Spain.
That's right.
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Let's ask it again.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Da 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 da.
George.
Just a little musical interlude here.
And we're back. So the rest of the story is that I always use that as my analogy when it comes to a question like this. Within $5, how much was a live Christmas tree in 2012? Because in my mind, I'm remembering when I was a kid and it was under $10.
In what year again?
2012.
85.
It's less.
58.
It's less.
50.
Oh.
This is 2012.
40?
It was $41.30 was the average price in the United States of America. I can't believe that. That's like talking to my kids, and they're like, can we go see this movie? Give me a 20. I'm like, but movies are only $3.
Or $1.
Why do you need $20? What U.S. state grows the most variety of Christmas tree species? Don't think too hard, Michigan. Yes, Michigan is known as one of the top Christmas tree variety states. Those are some great questions, Rachel.
They
Thank
were.
Very
they were
much.
Very good questions.
All about, I like it when there's a theme, like the trees.
Oh,
that's really
cool.
Tannenbaum.
Oh,
there we go. It's Jim singing, so we know it's good.
Oh, Lord.
We have another set of Christmas questions. Dear Matt and Profs, as promised, here are 12 Christmas questions for this year's holiday show. May you and everyone involved in the show have blessed holidays this year, and thanks one more for keeping us all entertained. Warmest wishes from Valencia, California, Frank Burrows. Frank's been working overtime doing questions in between.
I wonder what Christmas landscape in Valencia, California looks like.
It sort of looks like the surface of Mars right now, if Mars had trees that burned down. What James Bond movie has a character with the first name Christmas?
Jeff knows
this.
Denise Richards.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Christmas.
It's the 19th.
Jones, was
help?
It?
Yes.
Christmas Smith?
Christmas Jones.
Christmas Jones, okay.
Dr. Christmas Jones.
The World Is Not Enough.
The World Is Not Enough. I was going to say the theme song was sung by Garbage, if you remember that that band. In what movie would one find Clarence Oddbody?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. He was Clarence the Angel.
Yes.
He had a last name?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And he was played by Henry Travers. What a wonderful movie that is. Who played the Ghost of Christmas Present in the Bill Murray movie Scrooged? Wonderful movie.
Was it? It's not Carol Kane, is it?
Carol Kane, right off the top. Dan comes through. I absolutely
love that movie. I have not seen
that movie
in a billion years.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that one?
I don't think I've seen it.
Mary Lou Retton is Tiny Tim.
I've seen about five different versions of A Christmas Carol, but not that one.
Right. The Muppet one. I mean,
I think my favorite one is the Alistair Sim one from 1950.
Yep.
Because he goes berserk on Christmas morning.
Last year we caught, and you can get it now, you know, Audible or on YouTube. There's one where Patrick Stewart plays every character. Yeah. That's absolutely wonderful. Such a distinctive voice. What was the name of the location in the Christmas movie Die Hard?
The Nakatomi Tower.
The Nakatomi Tower. Yes, there's a hot item for Christmas time where it's the Nakatomi Tower Christmas party or something.
89, yeah.
Yeah, very, very cool.
Beth would love that one.
Oh, well, man. She watches it every Christmas Eve. I think that's tradition in her house.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the party.
That's depressing.
Yippee-ki-yay. Who's the main character and who voiced him in the movie Gremlins?
It was Gizmo.
Gizmo
the Mugwai.
Mm-hmm. Gizmo the Mugwai.
He had a voice.
It actually makes a lot of sense when you hear it the first time.
Frank Oz?
No, but that's a really good guess.
Well, is it like a Billy West, famous voice?
It's not even like that. It's more, this person is just a well-known comedian, but part of his shtick is the high-pitched voice of his alter ego, which he used for Gizmo. Surprised.
Dan, work it out. Come on.
I'm surprised you're not getting this. He was the host of a game show for a very long time. The name of the game show was, oh my gosh, I cannot think.
You're brain cramping too?
What was the name of the game show where you had to open all the suitcases till you got to the last one?
Oh, Billy Crystal?
Howie Mandel.
Howie Mandel. What was the name of the show? It's killing me.
Deal or No Deal.
Deal or No Deal.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, when they had all those models walking over the precipice.
That was a really stupid show.
Yeah.
I love that show. No. I'm sorry.
It's mathematically interesting for all of about 10 minutes, and then it's pointless after
that. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly. Yeah,
until everybody on the show makes decisions against the mathematics of.
Yeah.
There was one famous one which may have ended the entire series where it was between like a dollar and a million or something.
Yeah,
he went to open it like. But I think he had an offer of like $400,000 or $500,000.
Yeah, exactly.
And he still went for it. I think that was all rigged.
No, this is very interesting. There's an area of mathematics called utility theory that basically says a dollar to me may not be the same thing as a dollar to you in a different situation. You know, the actual value of things changes. It's utility,
right.
You know.
Right.
Well, and that guy, the Las Vegas gambler that won so big on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
He just stole it all every time because it's just numbers to him. That was his attitude toward it.
That's right.
It wasn't really money.
Right.
That's a good example.
Yeah. But you got to admit, that show was interesting because I always like, you know, the way they presented the banker and the silhouette, you know, that was always such showmanship there,
absolutely.
You know? I mean, it was just hilarious.
Well, Howie Mandel has his character, Little Poppy, that he does in his show, and he just used that voice for the voice of Gizmo. So, yeah, that's where we started. People forget that Gremlins is also a Christmas movie. What movie featured the main protagonists, Harry Lime and Marvin Merchants? And I think that this definitely might have been one of those like spell checks. Let's change that to the main antagonists, Harry Lime and Marvin Merchants. They're not protagonists at all. I could say a million things that would give it away immediately, but I want to see if you guys stew for a minute. Harry and Marvin.
Oh, that's not Home Alone?
Home Alone, yeah, it's Home Alone.
Oh, that's those guys?
Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern, yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not even joking. It's one of my top five favorite movies of all time. My son actually did one of those lines yesterday because we were at a restaurant and there was leftover cheese pizza and he put it in the box and then he opened it. A lovely cheese pizza, all for me. I don't know what it is. That kid creeps me out like
you
crazy.
You are so easily entertained.
I am. Oh, totally.
It's genetic, man. It's genetics. Oh,
yeah. Hey, walking over the broken glass ornaments and bare feet in Home Alone was easier to take than the broken glass in Die Hard. That's all I'm saying. In what movie would one find an intoxicated Santa played by Percy Helton?
Miracle on 34th Street.
Miracle on 34th.
Yeah, Miracle on 34th Street.
Kris Kringle had him removed from Macy's, yes.
Yeah, he was on the Thanksgiving Day Parade, wasn't it? And
yep.
He was up there just slurring his words and got him out.
That's my favorite Christmas movie.
I like that one too. Yeah.
That's a good one. What Christmas movie features the much sought-after toy Turbo Man? This one I actually didn't care for.
Not that it was the Arnold Schwarzenegger Sinbad movie.
Yes, it is.
What?
As the robots on Mystery Science Theater used to say, is it really right to...
Is it Jingle All the Way?
Jingle All the Way. Yes, exactly.
Oh, I never saw that one.
Who is the famous director-actor for the Will Ferrell movie Elf? Oh my gosh, this person is doing everything of artistic note lately. You won't even believe me when I tell you.
Wait, so there's
the director of Elf?
The director of Elf. And was actually in the movie because he stars in a lot of his movies.
Oh.
I'm not surprised you're not able to get this. He played Dr. Ben Leonardo.
Oh, in that movie?
Uh-huh.
Not Favreau.
Yeah, John Favreau.
You mean Happy Hogan himself?
Everything he touches turns to gold. Especially The Mandalorian, if you haven't seen it
yet. One of my favorites is still The Chef.
Yeah.
Love
that movie.
Oh.
He did that too?
Yeah, he was the main character. The Chef.
No, I'm thinking of
which one
else.
Are you thinking of?
No.
Yeah, this is John Leguizamo, Favreau, the famous chef, you know, loses it all because of a bad review. And then
no, I'm thinking of it.
Gets a food truck. Oh.
So Elf is my second favorite Christmas movie.
Oh, that's very nice. Very
of
nice.
Of course, never to surpass The Christmas Story.
Oh, of course. Of course. Come on. There is no Elf without
there
Christmas.
There is no other best Christmas movie.
So, Dan, are you going to be curling in a pink bunny suit this year?
No.
Oh, come on. They would love you.
That is not.
Too much lint on the ice.
Too much lint on the ice. I was just going to say that. That would not be appreciated by the other curlers.
In the movie The Polar Express, which basically is a textbook Uncanny Valley, I'm just going to put that out there right now. What Michigan city is home to the little skeptical boy, also home to author Chris Van Allsburg?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, Michigan, yes. Author of Jumanji and what other books?
Bunch of other ones.
Yeah, a bunch of other ones.
He shows up at the book beat all the time for book signings.
Does he?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the animation in Polar Express?
The people don't blink. They don't look human.
Yeah, they're uncanny. Creepy. That's the uncanny valley.
They are creepy.
That refers to the inability or the ability for a human to look at a CGI human and go, that's a robot.
Yeah.
It's not a real human being. But if you look at this new Star Wars video game that just came out this week, Fallen Jedi, it'll freak you out, man. Things are getting closer and closer to reality.
Oh, yeah. The Turing test, huh?
we're gonna be replaced.
Has anybody seen the new Star Wars series?
That's what I was bringing up, the Mandalorian. Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, is it good?
Very good.
So I didn't even know they were making
penny. Worth every penny.
Worth every penny? Well, I don't have to be forced to buy the Disney app.
Yeah, I'm afraid. But if you get the 7-day trial, you can after tonight you can watch 3 episodes.
So if I wait until it's all done, the first season, I can binge watch.
That's what
you
I'm
could,
gonna do.
You could technically do that because they are doing a little trick where they're only releasing one episode per week, like you know, television.
Well, that's what you do. You wait until you know we get one of those 2 feet of snow forecasts, and the day before you do your 7-day trial.
Yeah,
Put on a pot of glue. Got nothing better to do except binge watch something. So,
prior to Jimmy Durante's version singing Frosty the Snowman, who charted it before he did?
Oh, wasn't it that singing? Burl Ives? I want to say Williams something.
No, it wasn't Williams. Wasn't Perry Como. Wasn't Burl Ives.
Sinatra?
Got all the way up to number 4 on U.S. pop singles. Different time. Different time.
Gene Autry?
Gene Autry, yeah. Who, of course, is better known for getting Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer up to the top, which was Montgomery Ward's?
Yeah.
Crazy.
That was that era when singing cowboys were singing everything.
You had to have a horse, you know, in order to sing. So.
Oh, my gosh. Synonymous with Christmas music, whose 1958 album, Merry Christmas, that was the title of the album, went platinum 5 times.
Bing Crosby? Well,
not Bing Crosby. Oh, that's a very, very good
Perry Como.
Elvis?
Not Elvis.
Not Perry Como?
58.
I hesitate to bring up Diane because if she were here, she would know this off the top
Johnny Mathis.
I was going to say Johnny Mattress.
I thought you were going to say Johnny Mattress.
Johnny Mattress.
Diane's probably
she's probably got it.
She probably just doubled over in laughter hearing us.
All of a sudden, the door flies open. And
did somebody say Johnny Mattress?
For those who are hearing it for the first time, when Diane was on the show, she told us that for a while there, that would have been
when she was in college
when
here.
She was in college here. That was the top, for lack of a better description, makeout music.
Yes,
Johnny Mathis. Yeah. Yes,
and the nickname was
Johnny
Mattress.
Just perfect. Just absolutely perfect. All I can really say to that is that there are some Johnny Mathis Christmas songs where I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense for him to be singing that, and other ones where it doesn't. I don't know. I don't get him.
Well, you know, the other day we have a radio station here that I was listening for a minute, and it was Judy Garland, you know, singing "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." That is the saddest song. I mean, the way she sings it is just. Oh,
'cause she had a sad life.
Yep.
Did you see the movie, Judy?
With Witherspoon?
It was.
She did.
Nothing happy about the movie. It was well done. I
left that
it.
Movie depressed.
I did too.
See, I was thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Wow. I guess the time has come for us to say goodbye, so we'll go backwards around the table. Jim.
Well, goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
Dan.
Merry Christmas.
Jeff.
Ho, ho, ho.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.